You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Wolverine Confidential Podcast. I'm Andrew Kahn.
I'm Ryan Zook.
And I'm Aaron McMahon.
On this episode, we discuss Michigan softball's NCAA tournament draw, the NBA draft combine, and some football recruiting news, or lack thereof, coming up on Wolverine Confidential. All right, guys, good to be with you here. It's been a little while. It's Tuesday morning, May 17th. We got some things to discuss here, most notably, the Michigan softball team is headed to the NCAA tournament again. How many straight years is this?
27 straight tournaments. So
tournaments,
it's
right.
Yeah.
Can't say years anymore.
It's so difficult.
but yeah, they're back in it. They will be playing on Friday, their first game. They're in Orlando in the regional hosted by UCF, Central Florida. They were the 16 seed. 16 teams get to host. And they were the last team that got that reward, UCF that is, and Michigan will be there along with Villanova and South Dakota State. That's who Michigan will be playing on Friday at 3 o'clock, 3:30. It's kind of interesting, little budding rivalry with Michigan and the state of Michigan and the state of South Dakota here. To the women's basketball team played in the NCAA tournament, and now South Dakota State here in the softball tournament, the Jackrabbits.
And Villanova was in, the men's basketball team faced Villanova, and then the women's basketball team was in, faced Villanova too in the tournament. So
there you go. That's a good point. Yeah. And, UCF is a rematch of a softball game from earlier this year. Men's basketball played them as well. A lot of connections here. Football's played them somewhat recently. Okay, so let's go back first of all a little bit, kind of recap Michigan softball season, how they got here. I guess what do we need to know about the team heading into this NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I mean, they're playing some of their best softball of the year. It was an unusual, uncharacteristic slow start in the Big Ten for them. I mean, they started off 0-4, which considering they've won, they're always near the top of the Big Ten every single year, was kind of surprising, but they've won 12 of 15 to end the season, or heading into the tournament, winning 12 of 15. So they're playing pretty well. I mean, with their two pitchers that they've had now for 4 years, Alex DeRocco and Megan Bobian, they're going to be in most games. It's a matter of if the bats can get going and store enough runs, and they're starting to do that here towards the latter part of the season. So, they're playing pretty well, and I think they got the most favorable draw possible for the NCAA tournament. I know Carol Hutchins last year was just irate with the selection committee because she felt that they should have hosted a regional after the season they had, but the Big Ten played a conference only schedule. All the teams' RPI was they were punished for that, and had to go across country to Washington, which was also the number 16 overall seed. But I mean, they were better than the 16 overall seed. They were a top 10 team for most of the year, ranked a lot higher in RPI. But when you look at going to the UCF region, like you said, Michigan played them earlier this year, and Alex DeRocco threw a no hitter and a 6-0 victory. So they've had success against UCF, and there's no other Power 5 teams in this regional. So if you're Michigan, you really have to like their draw.
Yeah, the bats overall, yes, have come alive a little bit more towards the end of the season, but still the last couple games haven't quite been there. The semifinals of the Big Ten tournament on Friday night against Northwestern, the top seed in the Big Ten, you know, Michigan goes 6 2/3 innings with just one hit. They're down to their last out in the seventh. And all of a sudden, you know, base hit, home run. Now they go up 2-1 and they hold on in the bottom half of the inning for just a thrilling win. But, you know, a similar story against Nebraska in the championship, only 3 hits and 1 run for the whole game. You know, we're still right there to win it. It ended up going to extra innings, kind of a controversial call, didn't help Michigan late, and they lose 3-1 in 8 innings. But yeah, I'm with you. They've got the pitching to compete with anyone. It's just a question of whether the bats can, you know, get going at the right time. And that time is now or never in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, no, for sure. You need to score runs when it come turning time. And it takes some pressure off the pitchers too. I mean, if you know that you have to be perfect every time you're in the circle, it puts a lot of pressure on you to perform. So if Michigan can get out to a lead early in these NCAA regional games, they should be in pretty good shape. But yeah, anything could happen. But the fact that they don't have to go to another a Power Five team regional, it seems like a pretty good draw. I mean, because I think UCF getting a host bid was kind of a surprise. If they were mentioning it on the selection show, UCF's the only non-Power Five team to get a host bid. I know there's other teams like Texas that probably felt like they were deserving of hosting. So pretty nice draw for Michigan, and have 8-1 all time against UCF, 2-0 all time against Villanova, and Friday will be the first ever meeting between South Dakota State. So there is some past history between some of these teams as well.
What do we need to know about South Dakota State? What do they do well? I mean, I see 40-11 overall. You know, that 18-2 in conference, they dominated their league. What can you expect from them in Orlando?
Yeah, I mean, Michigan doesn't really hit many home runs, but that's not the case for South Dakota. I mean, they have 3 players with double digits. One player was 17. So they can hit the ball out of the ballpark. They also have 6 starters batting above 300. I mean, I'll bet against inferior competition than Michigan faced this year. And like Michigan, they have a two-headed monster in the circle, with two players with at least 18 wins and sub-2 ERAs. One pitcher is much more of a strikeout pitcher with 253 and 153 innings. The other pitches more to contact. So, you need 2 pitchers to go on a run in the NCAA tournament. And it looks like South Dakota State has a pair of dominant pitchers. It just, they haven't faced much top competition this year. They won the Summit League, which isn't a very strong lead whatsoever. I think they went like 18-2 during the conference play this year, and 3-1 in the conference tournament to win their second straight conference title. Not much history in the NCAA tournament for the Jackrabbits. Whenever you win 40 wins in a season, that's a pretty good year. So we'll see how that translates in come tournament play. But the one kind of similar or common opponent is Nebraska, and South Dakota State actually beat them twice this year. And Michigan went 0-3, I'm pretty sure, against the Cornhuskers. So if you're looking at head-to-head matchups or common opponents, you're like, all right, maybe South Dakota State can make it a tough game. And I think they can. Michigan would definitely be favored, I'm sure, heading into Friday.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, that Nebraska team that finished second in the Big Ten and then won the Big Ten tournament, as we mentioned, they had success against them. They also played, I saw they played Minnesota and Iowa once each, and lost to both of those teams. Minnesota finished under 500 in the Big Ten. Iowa was in last place. But again, a lot of these games were, you know, a long time ago.
Exactly.
You know, the most recent Nebraska games were in early March. How much, you know, you can put on that, I don't know. So much of it comes down to just whether you get the bats going and get those hits when you do get your base runners on, because against the elite pitching, those opportunities are rare. But they get South Dakota State, and, you know, Villanova and UCF, as we mentioned, the other teams there. Let's remind folks how it works. It's a double elimination deal. Yeah. So you play your round robin until it's not a set number of games, because it's kind of based on once once each team has two losses, basically. That's how it works. Winners play, losers play, and keep it moving from there. Sometimes you need that extra game to decide it at the end. But Michigan, the last time they got out of this round was when?
2016. So it's been a while. Yeah. Which is surprising because I mean they were making runs to the College World Series pretty regularly. And then they've only hosted one regional in that time. And they've come one win away a few times during that stretch and then would lose two straight in the finals to get eliminated, which hurts. But yeah, this year I didn't think they had a good shot. I mean, last year Washington was a very good team. Traveling all the way out to Seattle is tough on the players. But this year, I think if they don't advance, it would be a disappointment. They have the pitching to do it. They're not facing any top competition here. I mean, UCF's had a great year, but I mean, they were 3-7, I think, against ranked opponents. So they do have some impressive victories, but they've also played a tough schedule and didn't fare so well against other top teams. So it's a very winnable region. And yeah, at this point, I mean, with a little bit of a drought here to reach the super regional, I think anything less would be kind of a disappointment this season.
Pitching is so important too in these tournaments. You know, if you have one or two horses, as they say, it can help you go a long way. And if they can put together some strong performances, and Michigan can put some runs on the board, they, like you said, they shouldn't have an issue winning this regional.
So yeah, 3:30 Friday, South Dakota State on ESPN+. Hopefully you can get that and can tune into the game. We've got, as we said, some other topics to hit on too. The NBA draft combine is underway in Chicago right now, going on all week. Interviews and measurements and agility drills and shooting and some 5-on-5 action. Kind of the more exciting stuff is later in the week, Thursday and Friday. And there is one Michigan player there, and that is Musa Diabate. Eli Brooks is also in Chicago, same arena, for the G League Elite Camp. They usually select two or three of the best performers there, to compete in the regular combine later in the week. So if Brooks is one of those players, I'll be letting you know about it on MLive.com/Wolverines. But Diabate is there. He has till June 1st until to withdraw from the draft if he wants to come back to Michigan, or he could stay in the draft and be a one and done player. He should test well, you'd think. He's very athletic, tall and long, and moves well. Certainly the shooting is a concern, outside shooting. So we'll see how he looks in the 5-on-5 games. Caleb Houston is not there. He was.
Yes. Can we talk about Caleb Houston? Cause like it's absolutely been reported the last couple of weeks, ESPN and other outlets, that he's being potentially been promised a draft pick. I admittedly haven't paid much attention to the NBA draft the last couple of years, covering the Michigan football program, but I've never heard that before. Is that a thing? Is that something that's common?
Yeah. So ESPN story just yesterday, mentioned the players who declined invitations and the line about Caleb Houston was that, some NBA teams speculate he already has a promise in the first round, meaning that, the team has promised that they will take him. And therefore he feels no reason to then, go out and compete in front of all these other teams.
And on
the surface, it's a strange thing, right? You really can't promise anyone unless you're going to take them with the first pick, because Like, it just doesn't really work, because let's say it's the team picking, 22nd, whoever this is that, has promised Caleb Houston they're going to take him. Well, what if like a guy who is projected to go, in the lottery, like in the top 10, even for whatever reason, like falls.
Exactly.
Well, now this team is like, well, we didn't expect him to be here. Like, sorry, Caleb, we're taking this guy. So like, I just don't know how that works exactly. But I don't know. I guess if you had like multiple picks or whatever, it could happen. I've certainly heard it before, but it's strange. I mean, As soon as Houston wasn't attending, I reached out to various people in the league to try to get a sense for why, even generally speaking, a player would turn down an invite. So, reached out to a scout, someone in a front office, an assistant coach, and got various answers about, the reasoning. And one could be an injury. There's an injury that has forced this player to withdraw. There's no reason to believe that's the case with Houston, but that was a possibility. Some is that another reason is that, you know, they wanted the experience of working out for teams individually and getting some feedback, but they plan on returning to school. And that seems to be the case. For example, a player on Iowa, Chris Murray, you know, he it seems like he's coming back. So there was no reason for him to attend the combine if he wasn't fully serious. And then, you know, there's agents advising, you know, the fact that there's a lot of tape on him. I mean, he started every game, you know, for Michigan this past year, you know, 30 plus games. You know, he's played on the international level. He played high profile, you know, games in high school at Montverde. So, you know, they could say, listen, people saw you play, like you're in good shape. You know, you don't need to go out and do this and maybe only hurt your stock. So you don't know. There's just so many different factors from, you know, what the agent's telling them to how much they like school, to their family situation, to playing time for next year. Like, it's just unique to every player. So, yeah, but there is that report out there, and it's interesting, isn't it?
Very. And it just seems awful risky for the reasons you just laid out. I mean, mm-hmm. If someone falls, he risks the potential not being drafted. And I have to think, if I was him, and obviously I don't know all the details behind, but, like, you know, you think at least you want to work out at the combine, you know, at least show what you got. Yes, the tape is out there. People have seen you play. They know your potential and everything else. But you would think he would try and put himself in a better position in case, you know, something were to happen and that team that has quote unquote promised him a spot, you know, goes a different way, then it helps you open up the potential of being drafted elsewhere. So this is going to be fascinating to watch and see what happens. You know, I wish the best for him. You know, he's got high potential. We've talked about him a lot, but yeah, I can't remember the last time I've heard of that. And that's saying it hasn't happened before. Like you said, I'm sure guys have been promised picks before. But I'd be curious to know the conversion rate there of guys being told one thing and it actually, you know, happening.
Yeah. Well, we'll try to find, you know, his camp has been quiet, his family. You know, he's not like on social media at all. I mean, Musa Diabate has accounts, but he's not very, you know, active either on there. So it'll just be interesting as far as, you know, these announcements as we get closer to June 1st, you know, to kind of see what, you know, what's going to happen. Because, you know, Michigan, if they don't get either of them back, you know, might not be done in the transfer portal. I mean, there's no rule that you have to use all of your scholarships, but, you know, as you kind of look at the roster, and, you know, filling, you know, your starting lineup and your rotation, you know, they certainly better off with both these guys, or at least one of them. And if not, they might have to go elsewhere to try to fill those spots. So we'll see. Again, June 1st is the deadline for that, and the combine happening this week in Chicago. We said we were going to talk about some football recruiting news, but again, maybe it's the news is that there's not much. I don't know. You guys can fill me in here on what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, all quiet really on the Michigan recruiting front right now, which is not good news for the Wolverines. I mean, it was. Players were taking visits last month, and now the coaching staff's out for the spring evaluation period and evaluating prospects. And the fact that they haven't landed any commitments since March is a little bit alarming. They only have 6 players in this 2023 recruiting class, and it's still early. There's no time to panic yet, but the fact that they only have 6 players and their top-ranked commit, Raylan Wilson, a 4-star linebacker out of Florida, he's already scheduled official visits to go to two other schools in June, and it seems to have the door open for other schools to kind of pry him away from Michigan. Not great news for the Wolverines. So we'll see what happens, but Michigan struck out on a lot of top targets so far. So they're having to go to second, third, fourth options and are typically at this time of year, they would be offering guys in future classes, but you've seen a lot of players in this 2023 class announce this past month that they've received an offer from Michigan, which kind of tells you that they're moving on to plan B's here in trying to evaluate and find other players in this class, because some of their top options just straight up decided to go else or commit elsewhere. So it's not, nothing's official until signing day, but yeah, I mean, when you look at the rivals like Penn State, Ohio State, Notre Dame, even Michigan State's been recruiting pretty well. At this point, you're like, man, when's Michigan going to do something? And they need a big time commitment in a big way at this point to maybe generate some momentum that many people thought they had after a Big Ten championship last year. A
couple of things are at play here. One, I think we went over this last year. Didn't we have a similar discussion this time last year when they brought in Mike McDonald and overhauled the coaching staff? They got off to a slow start recruiting. Now, they didn't go through an overhaul to the same degree this offseason, but remember, they got a new defensive coordinator. Yes, it's a similar scheme and everything else, but it is a new face. They have a new defensive line coach, and they've got a new, I guess you could say, new offensive coordinators, one who was there, and both guys were there, but they're new faces and potentially with a slightly different system. So the coaching staff changes are always a concern. You know, that recruiting is always a concern when you change coaches, no matter what. Yes, the system is probably remain largely the same, but a lot of these kids, remember, when it comes to especially recruiting high school players, they recruit because of the relationships they build with some of these coaches. So when these coaches leave, you almost got to restart the situation. Not always, but in this situation, this is probably a big deal. Now, the other thing, the elephant in the room that everyone in Michigan certainly isn't going to talk about is NIL. I mean, that is certainly becoming a big deal at some schools. They're leveraging that for different reasons in different ways. You can make the case maybe bending the rules a little bit in terms of the NCAA. Now, whether that's affecting Michigan, we don't really know, because it's not, you can't like quantitatively like, determine that. So it's all kind of speculation, everything else. But that's certainly become an issue. I mean, it's helped some schools as you've seen on the recruiting trail. And I suspect if it's helped some schools, it's going to hurt others. So Michigan's in a weird situation right now with, again, new coaches. They're navigating this new transfer portal NIL system. And then I think you've seen the results so far. Now, as I mentioned, we went through this time last year. I suspect things are going to pick up as you hinted at, Ryan. Now, it may result in Michigan not getting some of those top, 100, 150 players in the country. So it's unfortunate, because Michigan's coming off so much momentum on the field with the Big Ten title and getting the playoff. You would hope they would be able to retain most of their assistants, and they did. But the problem is they lost two of their biggest high profile assistants and their offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator. So I don't say they're back to square one, but there's certainly some, they've got some reconnecting to do.
Yeah. And then if you look at the past two cycles, you had JJ McCarthy in the 2021 class commit early. He's able to recruit other guys and they're able to build a class around him. Last year, they got five-star cornerback Will Johnson pretty early to commit, able to build around him. And at this point, they don't really have a prospect they can build around. I mean, Raylan Wilson's a top 100 guy, but again, he doesn't seem like he's ethically recruiting other players to Michigan, because he doesn't even know if he's going to stay committed to Michigan at this point. We'll see what happens, but Michigan needs some, it would help them to land a big fish that they can maybe build around. But this time last year, it's not like Michigan's class was ranked very high either. And then they have a really strong season on the field and then land some top prospects and just leading up to signing day. So like I said, nothing's official until signing day. With Michigan's favorable schedule again this year, they're probably going to have another successful season on the field that could sway a lot of prospects in the fall. But yeah, right now there's not much positive news to report for Michigan fans.
The phrase "no news is good news" does not apply here. Is that what you're telling me?
That's 100% correct.
All right, well, stay tuned. We'll have it covered if there is any news to report on that front. And you can find that information on MLive.com/Wolverines. Thank you for listening.